We deny that civil governments have lawful jurisdiction or authority to remove anyone's right to pursue their livelihood and conduct their affairs in public. A lot of people would disagree with what I just said. That's Article number 19 from the Warrington Declaration on Medical Mandates, Biblical Ethics, and Authority. This is episode number 4 on this subject matter. The goal was to try to get these squeezed into 5. We'll see if we can finish this up with next week's episode. Well, if we're quick about it this week and quick about it next week, we will. Otherwise, we might have to do a 6th show at some point. We'll have to see. Anyway, I'm Troy Skinner. This is The Faith of Faith. Thanks for spending part of your Sunday morning with us again. And if you're listening on podcast, thank you for spending part of whatever day of the week it happens to be. Daniel Razvi on the panel. He was feisty last week. We agreed with like the first 18 articles pretty much just right across the board. And then we got to Article 18 and the wheels came off. Daniel said, no, they're wrong. I can prove it. Listen to me. And we did like almost the whole show on that one. And then David Forcey.
You telling me to shut up now?
No. And then David Forcey was like, well, I just think the whole article was too long, so I don't like it. And that's pretty much all he had to contribute to that argument last week.
Helpful, David.
So I was contrarian with David, but by the end of that long conversation, I kind of ended up being swung around. I'm to David's point. The article's too long, therefore I disagree with it.
Actually, I think it should have been like two different articles because they first made the point that it was not biological at all, and then they made a second point that the ceremonial law is defunct now, which I think are two different points.
Yeah. They somebody took a nap, like I said. Thomas Jefferson left the room, and somebody, John Adams walked in and started writing or something. I don't know what happened. So this next one, I think we're going to like a lot because it's short. Mm-hmm. The one I just read
at the
start.
I still disagree with it.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You deny that civil governments have lawful jurisdiction to remove anyone's rights to pursue their livelihood and conduct their affairs in public.
I would say...
So last week you ended by saying, look, I think the COVID mandates were totally like illegitimate, and yet you're disagreeing with their arguments that are saying they were illegitimate.
I think it depends on what their livelihood and the affairs that they want to conduct are.
I think the civil government has lawful jurisdiction to prevent prostitutes from pursuing their livelihood in public or anywhere. Right? So there clearly are certain livelihoods that the federal government can restrict. And also conducting their affairs in public. Yes, I think if you are selling your wares outside Jerusalem on the Sabbath day, the government can prohibit you from doing so, right? So there's clear biblical precedent for
that. I wonder if I've picked up on a trend here. So the first part of this declaration, the first half, section one on authority, we were singing their praises, how strong and clear and definite the language was. Like, this is really well written. And now I'm noticing that we're in section number 2, the section on application of medical mandates, that we haven't been all that thrilled with how they've formulated and structured the arguments.
Enough.
The words aren't precise. It feels a little bit, I wonder if different people wrote the sections, like if they had primary writers.
It must be.
And whoever wrote the first section was like drinking lots of coffee and was nailing it. And the other guy was recovering from a hangover, and this is what we got.
I have a feeling we're gonna all end up agreeing with their ultimate conclusion here, probably, which is really talked against this whole pandemic response stuff that we had.
But number 20 ties right into 19. It's basically the same kind of thing. We deny that civil governments have lawful authority to enact lockdowns predicated on protecting public health, as this is not their jurisdiction.
And I would say, yes, I agree with that, except in the case of a symptomatic individual who could be contagious to others. I think you lock them down. That's what the Leviticus passages are talking about. And possibly somebody who has come into contact with somebody like that.
And so again, I think the point they're trying to make, I'm trying to read their mind, but based on what we know about this declaration, I think it's a fair assumption, is they're talking about they have no lawful authority to enact mass lockdowns.
Yes.
On people that should be presumed to be healthy. Like, there's no reason to assume that they're, like, there's, you're just locking everybody down, no matter what, willy-nilly. Like, if they had added the words lawful authority to enact mass lockdowns.
I mean, quarantine used to mean a different thing before COVID. Quarantine used to mean you've been exposed to a deadly disease. It's obvious you've been exposed. We know for a fact. So we're going to watch you and make sure you don't get sick. And if you don't, then you're fine, right? But you only, not everybody else in your town.
Yeah. And I'm going to, just as a point of personal clarification, I'm not meaning to nitpick, but quarantine still means that post-COVID. It's just that the rest of the world is using the word wrong.
Well, at a certain point, the word gets used wrong often enough.
Like the shots that they call vaccines All right, we're going to, if we don't get flagged on social media for this, we probably never will on this show. But it used to be a vaccine was an inoculation to keep you from getting and spreading the disease. That was the idea.
Now
it's a therapeutic.
They said the COVID vaccine is designed to limit how much symptoms you have after getting the disease.
Yeah, it's a therapeutic for the symptoms. So basically, by that definition, taking an aspirin for a headache is a vaccine. Like they've vaccine means what vaccine always meant. It's just that now the so-called elites, the power brokers, they're misusing the word and redefining it illegitimately. They don't have the authority. They're outside their jurisdiction. This is unbiblical. Mm.
No, they don't have the authority to define terms.
No.
I disagree with the precise nature, imprecise nature of the language. We agree with what they mean here, which is the mass lockdowns of people that are not necessarily obviously exposed to certain diseases. That's not the jurisdiction. But I think targeted quarantines of specific people who have been exposed is a legitimate thing, and I think is backed up by scripture.
Yeah, and I'd have to think about you're talking about the leprosy, which came up last week, right?
Or any, I think that applies to any contagious disease.
But yeah, but I'm using that as like a strong.
Any contagious disease.
Yeah, I mean, it's just growing up, right? If you have the flu, you're not going to come over to somebody's house. You're like, I don't want to make you sick. I have the flu, right? So that's something that you do, and you're quarantining yourself. But if it's I think it's reasonable to have those practices.
I think any contagious disease is just far too broad. So one of the things I was thinking about with the leprosy, right, is it's
unrecoverable. You can't recover from it.
It's unrecoverable, right? According to except by divine intervention,
right?
You know, as far as Israel was concerned, you go to the priest so that there sort of is like an objective person that everybody agrees, okay, they decide, or they look at it. They're also practiced at looking at it to see if it is or isn't. But they could, anybody could tell, yes, this is what it is, right? This is the type of thing it is.
Right, that's true. So that makes sense. There definitely seems to be something about leprosy, like that's impossible to recover. Nobody recovers from it.
Right.
Like rabies, right? So that's another example, right? When I was a kid, I got bitten by a stray cat, and the animal control came and captured the cat, and they watched it for a week because they said, look, if it gets rabies within a week, then we know that you've been exposed to rabies and you should get the rabies shot. But if it doesn't get rabies within a week, then you haven't been exposed. So they quarantined the cat. But that's an example of a unrecoverable disease. If I got rabies, I was going to die, right? There's no undoing that. And so maybe that's a better analogy.
So that sort of is my thought there. I'm not saying...
So you shouldn't quarantine for the flu or for the cold.
But even if there is a quarantine, I'm trying to think about these jurisdictions and who has the authority. And now everybody, by default, the government's in charge. I don't care what it is. Government's in charge of everything. Right. That's how it's become the total state.
Like,
they're controlling everything.
But kind of like feeding the poor, right? The church is supposed to be involved with that, but the government's doing it.
But I love old movies. I'm a sucker for old black and white movies. And a lot of those old black and white movies from years ago, first of all, they're from years ago, but they also would oftentimes have storylines that were rooted in things even further back years ago. Like they would, you know, westerns or things about like the 1700s or, you know what I mean? Like they were period pieces and things like that. And it wasn't that there were, you know, people were sick. That was maybe one of the big crisis moments in the movie.
Scarlet fever.
And there was a quarantine. But the government in a lot of these movies, if they're accurate representations of what reality was like in the world, I don't know. But in these movies anyway, the government wasn't mandating the quarantine.
The pastor was.
It was. And it was like almost like a social compact. Like the doctor would say, oh my gosh, David, you have this horribly contagious disease. You need to be in quarantine. And David would say, okay. And his family would say, okay. And the pastor would say, like everybody, it was just a social compact. Well, I don't know who had authority or jurisdiction there, but it wasn't like a top-down mandate from the government.
Somebody, if we have any liberal listeners, one of them might now pipe up and say, well, you're making my point for me. Clearly, we should listen to the experts on the topic. The doctor was the expert. He diagnosed him. Therefore, we should all lock down. The expert has spoken. End of discussion. End of debate. That's kind of what they talk about.
Yeah, except now the so-called experts have proven they lack any sort of expertise across the board these days. Everything's off the rails. Everybody's hair is on fire.
So what's also interesting with the example of leprosy, with the example of the olden back days, as you're talking about.
And it might not even be the doctor, right? If there's a disease, scarlet fever running through, and the family knows the signs, the family can make that determination. Like, oh my gosh, David's got the family. So it didn't have to be the expert necessarily.
So in all these examples, it's very, there's a personal examination, right? It's very individual. It's very localized, right? The jurisdiction, the authority is all very localized and is not, you know, nationalized.
Or globalized.
Right, yeah. Yeah. You go to your local priest, right? And your local priest makes a determination.
So the question is, we do live in a much more globalized society now, though. I mean, you can get on a plane tonight and be in Beijing tomorrow.
Okay. And if I affect anybody there, then the local, right, decides what to do locally, mm-hmm. right? And so wherever, you know, and so sure, a local jurisdiction could say, it seems like, so here's a good question. Can the civil authorities do a lockout? If they can't do a lockdown?
Keep everybody out?
Say if you have symptoms, you can't come in?
Right. That sounds much more reasonable.
Which is what happened a lot of times. You couldn't travel between countries.
Right. Now, does that affect your livelihood?
It did for many people. But there are other examples, now that I'm thinking about it, in Scripture of people that are sick and they're in society, right? Hezekiah was sick, and the Isaiah went over and talked to him, and clearly other people were around him. Like, he wasn't put out.
Right.
But Nebuchadnezzar got this disease, and he was put out.
Well, yeah.
I think that the declaration...
it wasn't the same disease, but I'm saying there are various other diseases mentioned, not just leprosy in the Bible.
Right, yeah.
And the way they deal with them sometimes is by expelling, and sometimes is by just treating the sickness. Right. So maybe it does have to do... But then the question is, how deadly does it have to be? What's the line? Because some people do die of the flu. Forget COVID. People do die of the flu, but most people would not consider the flu to be all that dangerous of a disease.
Right.
And nobody starts screaming and weeping that, the horror that I got the flu. They're like, oh, that's annoying. You know, but they're not, they're not horrified that they might die, generally.
Yeah, I think...
And at the beginning of COVID, was what we were thinking, because there was stories of a 25% death rate in China. And that's what the news was saying. So for the first few weeks, it did seem like everybody was going to die of COVID, and it seemed like it was the leprosy. And I think a lot of times, and this is what you said, Troy, on the station before, you said that some of the churches that did initially follow those mandates and lockdowns and stuff did so out of great, clear conscience and wanting to help other people. And as soon as a few weeks later, it was becoming abundantly clear that that was not the case, that this was such a dangerous a disease worthy of all these mandates, that they reverse their positions on it. You don't have any problem with that kind of a church, but you're preaching against the churches that...
Yeah, those that were paying very close attention weren't fooled and immediately recognized we were being lied to. But not everybody is able to pay as close of attention to every little thing that's going on in the world. And so you're just seeing what, you know, David Muir has to say on the, you know, 6:30 news on ABC, and if he tells you everybody's going to die, well, it must be true until you have time to check it out. And then some pastors checked it out, and after a number of weeks or a month, maybe 2 months max, they realize, okay, this is not checking out. They're lying to us, or at least they're mistaken. Then there was those, of course, who just refused to acknowledge reality, and they stayed locked down or shut down or whatever for a couple of years, even in some cases, I think. It's crazy. But it seems like this declaration, they're saying that this is not the civil government's jurisdiction. Daniel is not agreeing with that at all. David and I have been trying to say, well, maybe what they're saying, it's the ecclesiastical thing, which is kind of what
I'm very
saying.
Sympathetic to that.
However,
to that
then
argument.
Here comes number 21. They got a king and an ace here. It says, we affirm that individuals are free to restrict their own movement about society to this end, should they deem it wise to do so. They may not lawfully demand that civil government employ force on their behalf to restrict the liberty of others. So now it seems like they've almost pivoted from an ecclesiastical matter to an individual self-governance matter.
So I, going back to the leprosy thing, this is like it was in the Constitution, right? Like, if you will, right?
Right.
How we handle this kind of disease is this way. Everybody knows up front. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what we're going to do.
Right.
Right. So I think that does maybe that has some relevance here, right, is what is the understanding, you know, what the civil government, maybe we should say the civil government doesn't have, you know, an authority in something like a democratic republic unless they're given that authority by the people, right? So some of this does have to do with maybe the type of government that's in place.
Yeah, and not to make this a political thing, but that was part of the challenge that people who are constitutionalists had, is if the government in general would be allowed to do this, assuming that that was assigned to them based on what you just said,
right?
The Constitution as it stands now, a fair reading of it anyway, doesn't seem to give the government the kinds of authority that they took it upon themselves to demonstrate back in 2020 and 2021. It's unconstitutional was a common refrain I was hearing from my friends, right? This is unconstitutional. First of all, I was one of the ones warning people, you know what's coming? This is what's coming. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, this is what's coming. They're like, oh, no, they'll never do that. It's unconstitutional. And then they did it.
Yeah.
And I said, see, they did it. No, but well, they can't continue to do it. It's unconstitutional. They couldn't have done it to begin with because it's unconstitutional. So you think they're going to stop doing it because it's unconstitutional? Like, listen to yourself. And we live in a post-Christian, post-modern, post-constitutional America.
And,
right?
And so what do you do? And as soon as the first bureaucracy was established, as soon as Congress first delegated something.
Right, yeah.
That was unconstitutional.
Now we're a nation.
We've been unconstitutional since
then. We are a nation of middle managers. That's what we've become. We are a nation of middle managers, middle management. It's running the show.
So how do you deal with the passage where God tells the Israelites, oh, you want a king? Okay, let me tell you what the king's going to do. He's going to do this, and he's going to take your sons and your daughters to be servants in his castle, and he's going to force you to fight in his armies, and he's going to tax you, to no end, and he's going to do all those things. And the people's like, oh, yeah, give us a king anyway, right? Which is really stupid. But the point is, God was telling them, like, this is what a king does. And he's almost, and then God ordains a king, right? So God said, this is what kings do. And then he creates and appoints a king.
Yeah,
so
it's almost like God's saying you're going to end up with a fleshly king who's going to do unrighteous things.
This is what a sinful man.
Yeah, this is what a sinful man who's made king is going to do. That's what I think how I would read that. But
because God doesn't punish Saul for doing any of those things that in the long list, like taking servants and raising armies and raising taxes. He punishes Saul for specifically disobeying. But he punishes Saul for specifically disobeying his commands and sinning, but not in the way that he governs overall.
Yeah. So again, I think just because God doesn't act immediately in addressing somebody's sin doesn't mean that they're getting a pass. You know, right.
So part of what you're saying,
he's a long-suffering God.
That in some ways we have gotten what we've asked for as a country because we've...
Maybe. I was just trying to push back on the idea that the civil government is extremely limited because of Scripture. I'm wondering if maybe they do sometimes have more authority just because they are in charge, and that's how God set it up. But I don't necessarily hold to that opinion. I was just kind of bringing it up as a counterpoint.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a point in there definitely that all...
I think your phone died.
All authorities are going to seek to overstep their authority.
Somehow my phone died. I think I made the mistake of not connecting to the Wi-Fi here, and it uses more energy. So if you're listening to this and you're mad that you were listening to this via the video portion and it cut out at this part, this is now bonus coverage on the audio. Sometimes I get bonus coverage on the video, but now this is content you'll only hear on the audio. See, it works both ways. So who has the jurisdiction, the audio audience or the video audience? I don't know.
All right, I guess we continue with this?
Their jurisdiction is either to turn it off or keep it on.
All right, so we're up to Dos Equis II, number 22. We deny that such violations of medical freedom by the civil government or the subsequent mandating of vaccines and masks are rightly justified based on the claim that unmasked or unvaccinated persons present a general danger to the health of the public due to viral spread.
I agree. And going back to Leviticus, there's a clear example of people that are symptomatic,
But there's no example of, just in general, everybody needs to do X, Y, and Z and stay away from each other so that we don't communicate this disease. There's no precedent in the Bible for that.
Yeah, I don't know. This is dangerous territory because, I mean, I'm so tempted to talk about the merits of these so-called vaccines.
But it doesn't matter.
And the masks.
But it doesn't matter. Masks and vaccines, they could all be proven beyond a shadow of a doubt with nobody disagreeing. Every single expert completely agreeing, even the conservative ones completely agreeing. These are 100% effective. So the government does not have the authority to do it. The Bible is very clear on that. And I think that's the point they're making. And I think it's important that they didn't include talks about the efficacy of such masks or vaccines.
So I'm trying to understand the consistency of the argument. So if I'm understanding it correctly, the government would be able to say, David, you must stay in your house. But the government doesn't say, unless you put on a mask.
No. You can make David stay in his house if it can be shown that he's been exposed to a specific deadly disease for a time.
Say,
7 days.
Say Ebola, for instance.
7 days, for example, which is what's given in Scripture. And if he does not show symptoms, he's free to interact in society after that. But having shown symptoms, now he must put on a mask. That's also...
Assuming they work, is what you're saying.
If he comes near another person,
And or stay outside the camp.
What about...
Yes, that was the reason. But it said, put the covering on your upper lip and cry unclean if somebody comes near you, right? So that's the whole point, is so that you don't spread your bodily fluids that are germified into other people.
But what about pinwheels? If he has an Ebola virus infection, could the government make him wear pinwheels on his head?
So that everybody knows I have an Ebola infection?
I think the covering on the upper lip is what is the only thing that you can say is mandated.
All right, number 23 I'll do here. This is probably the last one for today. We affirm that it is the Christian duty of each family to seek the well-being of their neighbor, and that this includes adopting reasonable practices for the symptomatically ill to refrain from knowingly exposing their neighbors, especially in a crowded or public context. Each Christian should seek to live at peace with all men in a manner that displays the love of Christ in obedience to the law of God. I don't really love this one, but I'll let you guys go first.
I think it's actually, I agree with it. It makes sense.
Okay.
I think that last line leaves a lot of room for wacky interpretations.
Well, so they before they got here, they said, okay, the civil authorities don't have jurisdiction here, right? Mm-hmm. So they establish that first, mm-hmm. and then they say, now it is a matter of essentially it's a matter of discernment and conscience
in the family.
Yeah, but there's the thing I don't like about this is they make it specific to the Christian family, and I'm willing to bet that 3% of the American population is Christian, so the other 97% have no jurisdiction over them of how to handle this. What's the enforcement mechanism here?
So then remove the word Christian. It's the duty of each family.
They put the word Christian here more than once.
I think the idea there. Well, yeah, that's true. I think part of it is, okay.
It's the Christian duty.
Only the Christians are going to be following this document in the first place. It's written to Christians.
Yeah, but this is about the application. This is how to take all these principles that we think are biblical and how to make it work in the real world. How does this apply when the rubber meets the road?
How is it applied? I don't know. I think it's how does it apply to Christians? Because it's written to Christians saying, which things do you obey and not obey? And they're saying, well, you are a Christian. You can do this. And you don't have to do this, and you can choose to do this, and then you must do this.
So if you're a Christian in government and you agree with them, you're going to say, okay, I, as the governor of the state of Maryland, don't have the authority to mandate lockdowns or mandate masks or whatever. It's incumbent upon all the Christian families to do that on their own when you know in the state of Maryland, heck, it's probably 3% nationwide that are Christian. It's probably 1% in Maryland that's Christian.
I think you're overthinking it.
It would be what they are saying is if you are a Christian in a place of civil authority that you say, okay, this is up to families to figure out.
Yeah, I think because I think that God's law, certainly Christians should abide by it, but it's not merely the – so if they got rid of the word Christian, I think I would like this, right? Yes. We affirm that it is the duty of each family to seek the well-being of their neighbor. Just because you're not Christian, you don't get a get out of jail free card. That'd be mean to your neighbor.
I think you're overthinking it because this was clearly written to the Christians.
We're way out of time. I got to wrap up. This is the Faith Debate. Daniel, David, I'm Troy. Find us online at householdoffaithinchrist.com. Till next week, 167 and a half hours from right now. God bless.
Past editions of this program are available in the audio vault at WFMD.com.